be nothing without you holding me up. Now I'm strong enough for both of us. Shoulders, tell me what you see. Cause I am a giant. We'll be breaking borders.
Thanks for tuning in to the next installment of my discussion with Dr. Patrick Sim. Through the last episode, we spoke about time and space. As this conversation will continue through this part of the episode, we'll also introduce new topics around the ACC, around politics in Australia, and just the direction of chiropractic and our part that we can play as individuals within the profession. So hopefully you can enjoy the installment. If you've got any questions and queries, info@thephilosophysymposium.com is the best email address to get me on. So we pick up our conversation here talking about health and the impact of chiropractic on health. So hopefully you continue to enjoy the conversation, and I look forward to talking soon.
We know as chiropractors that health is more than just the presence or the absence of a disease. Okay, and the World Health Organization has a definition which is very similar to that, and that there are many chiropractors out there who would work towards someone making better choices in their life so that they are healthier. Okay, so maybe they do more exercise or eat better food or whatever they are doing. And these are all very good and amiable things. But I wondered, what is it that drives the choice making? You know, what is it that, and I'm sure everyone's seen this, that someone chooses to start seeing you as a chiropractor, but at the same time, they have chosen to do the exercise and do the food change and do those other things which are healthier. Yep. What is it about them? And it's not necessarily the supplication that's driven this. They have decided to start chiropractic because they know it's good for them.
Yep.
Okay? Or they've decided to exercise because they know it's good for them. Or they've decided to eat better because they know it's good for them. So I became fascinated in, well, what is it that changes within us then that drives those decisions? So I started thinking that it's got to be around how well we understand the world and how well we can process that information, and essentially then how much more conscious we are around who we are and the environment which we're in. So if in seeing a chiropractor, being subluxation reduced means that our choices are better, to me, that's a better expression of our individual consciousness. And it's not to say that there is a set of choices which are correct or are wrong, but our ability to see things and to make an informed decision on how we're going to proceed, that to me is a level of consciousness that's been changed. So, yeah, go on.
No, I was just about to say, look, one of my first podcasts that I did a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to Nimrod Wiener about consciousness, and another deep thinker. I don't know why I keep interviewing guys that are just so far, far past me, but that's okay. And Nimrod, not only was his take on the individual consciousness, but on the collective consciousness and the way that, number one, that we get to experience the world we live in, but also then the impact that we have on the greater collective as well. So you can take that so much further, even just from an individual choice, an individual drive, an intrinsic thing to a more reflective upon society, a reflective upon, you know, as you say, evolution and purpose. Like, what are we here for? Where are we going with this journey?
Yeah, in some ways we're just a leaf in a stream, aren't we?
You know?
Maybe all we can really see is us as a leaf or those around us who are also leaves of this stream. We don't always see the stream itself or actually the map of the continent on which that stream is flowing.
Yeah.
So I think Nimrod and I are completely the same page when it comes to this. I think the effect that we as chiropractors have is on consciousness. And that's not just the individual consciousness. I don't know if you've heard Bruce Lipton speak recently when he spoke at the Rubicon event in Melbourne in 2017. Yeah. He was talking how the best indicator of evolution is the nervous system. So when you look within an organism itself, as that nervous system within those organisms increase, they become more community-minded. So you go from single-cell organisms, which then become multicellular organisms. And as the communication system within that organism grows, then the complexity and the ability of that organism improves too. When you start applying it to humans, it's sort of the same. You know, we've gone from these tribal existences to towns, into cities, because the fact that we are growing with our consciousness means that we can encompass more community. Mm-hmm. He ended up with saying that, you know, now the best indicator of the nervous system on our planet is the internet, because it connects all of us.
It brings the communities together.
That's exactly right. So it just shows there's that evolution then of thought and consciousness.
Yeah.
Within my thesis, this is what I was trying to get at, was that, you know...
Sorry to interrupt.
Our role as chiropractors is to affect the consciousness of the person we're working with. Perhaps more importantly, though, to affect our own consciousness so that we can continue to be leaders, as it were, for how people can make decision making, what choices they can have, which is going to affect on their lives, but more importantly, on the lives of their children and on their children's children, and you know, the community that goes on after them.
Yeah. Interesting. Maybe I'm playing too small.
Well, I don't think you'd be alone. I think the same. Or have I waited too long?
Yeah.
One of the motivators for me this was
Now then when
when it comes to space and time, we only have a very small amount of it. I think I said before that the universe is about 13.4 billion years old. The 100 years that I live in the scope of that 13.4 billion years is minuscule. It's not even a percentage. It doesn't count. So you know, my life essentially does not count, and nor does yours, anyone's. Well, thankfully, neither does Trump's or else's. So, you know, we can have an impact on right now, but on in the scope of the universe, it's insignificant. But for the paradox here is, though, you know, I am supremely significant to myself. You know, and to my children, okay, and to those people around me who know
that you influence, that you change.
So given I've got a small amount of time and I do have that sense of protection around these people and love around these people, then what am I going to do with the time that I've got? And I feel as though I've wasted most of my life so far. I have wasted it.
Shit, now I have too. I was doing okay until I spoke to you, Pat.
So it is really, you know, is Horace who said, carpe diem, seize the day. I think everyone at some point has an awareness that, oh, my God, my time is running out. I think for some people, they are on their deathbed when they realise. Hopefully I'm a fair way away from that point.
I was about to say, it's not always a negative thing, though. It's not always something that you should be thinking of as a bad situation. And, you know, like reading some of Eckhart Tolle's work, the only thing you can control is the now. You know, so inevitably that's all you can – you can't influence what has been based on now. You can't influence what is future based on now. You just do now, probably to the best of your ability, and the rest of it will fall into place.
Well, I agree with that completely. I think now is the time to take action. But do you have the impetus to do that? Like, do you have the vision or the view of the world of the universe to actually take that step? I think when you start to realise that time is running out for you, that's when great stuff starts happening. Okay, so you look at the people who've really made a difference in the world over history. I think they've all been driven by that. That they only have a short amount of time, or they've been driven by the fact that I've got to get this job done in time so I can protect these people here. So in essence, whilst space and time destroys, it also motivates. That's why space-time is here, and that's why we die. Because imagine a life if you were immortal.
I'd be procrastinating more than I ever have.
There'll be no point to do anything. I doubt any of us would work, because what would be the point?
Why?
You just, it reminds me of...
Worry about it tomorrow.
Worry about it tomorrow. You know, right now, I'm just going to do whatever. So with having a finality to things, in the same sort of way you might want to get in everything you can today, you may want to get the gardening done today or the washing done today, in the course of your life, you know, what are you going to do?
What's the greater purpose?
There doesn't necessarily have to be a purpose that you have to find. There's not necessarily something within you. And I think this is where the existentialists are great. You know, Sartre and Camus and those guys, they talk about how absurd life is. Right? It's just a ridiculous thing that we would be born, we live 100 years and have no impact at all. So we worry so much about things, you know, whether she loves me or whether he hates me or, you know, whether I can buy this or I can't afford that. It's absurd when you think about it in the course of someone's lifetime.
Mm.
And so what they say is, you know, take some ownership over that. You know, do whatever it is that you want to do with your time. It's a very self-centered, selfish point of view in some respects, but at the same time, it's about you taking ownership. They also talk about, you know, particularly Sartre, he talks about transcending your facticity, which means that, you know, we may have done some things in our life in the past, so there are some facts about what we have done, but they don't have to define you.
No.
The fact that you have, never exercised in your life doesn't mean that has to be the rest of your life. The fact that you have always exercised in your life doesn't mean you have to always do that. So often we are defined by what we think other people expect of us, or we are defined by what we have already done. That doesn't have to be the case. You know, what is it that you want to do right now? Okay, what do you think is going to fulfill you the most? For me, it was having kids. I was told I couldn't.
That was the reality check for you?
Yeah. Because
it was the spark?
Well, it was they're so fragile.
Mm.
They're so little. And I was told I couldn't have kids initially.
Yeah.
And, you know, that put me down a road and, you know, end up separating with my wife and splitting up and, you know, met someone and now we have two children. You know, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, but they are so rare and they are so fragile. And the insight for me, you know, being human, I could see that from my own perspective, is that I am similarly just a baby. I'm similarly just a child.
Yeah.
And so my life and my presence here is equally fragile.
Yeah.
So I could go just as quickly as what they could.
Yes.
And so that drove me to think, okay, well, I've got to protect these kids.
Yep.
And I suppose start getting the ACC here. How am I going to provide these children access to the philosophy that I have had around my life? And worse, you know, what if there is no chiropractic? How are my children's grandkids, who I'm never going to meet, how are they going to have access to it?
Yeah.
So if you start thinking more long term, when you are no longer here, then what are you going to do?
I love the I think it's more the Native Americans that used to always make decisions based on, you know, the five generations. You know, the five generation down the track, how's what we do today going to impact them? And I think it's a really, like, it's that very outside in, you know, model of that encompassing worldview of every decision is going to have an impact at some way, shape or form. But don't worry about what it does for you, worry about what it does down the track. And yeah, that's why I take my hat off to you in the fact that you have been so proactive with the ACC, because you see, you know, I think a lot of people saw a need for something to change, and I, you know, I didn't necessarily know how to do it. I didn't necessarily know how to make the wheels start to turn, and you know, I think we all thought that there needs to be an altered system that then currently exists, but you know, you've been able to put in all the processes and then the groundwork, but it's got to start with that vision. And you know, so massive hat off to you for what you've created so far.
It's funny, like it's been a lot of work. Mm. It hasn't necessarily been hard work.
Yeah.
Another thing I've noticed nowadays is that, maybe this has always been the case, I don't know, a lot of people complaining or calling out for something, but always expecting someone else to do it.
Yeah.
I think for me, coming after my own kids, when I had a personal drive to protect for them, what were my other options? I had choices, sure, but in a very large way, I felt completely compelled.
Yeah.
And as far as it, could anyone do it? Yeah, I reckon anyone could have done what we have done with the ACC. Like anyone could have done that. It hasn't been, I mean, most people listening to this, I imagine, are higher education qualified people. They've done a bachelor's degree or double bachelor's degree or a bachelor's and master's or something similar to that. So I know they're intelligent. Yeah. So anyone out there could do this. But I think so often we are caught up in our own selves that we can't see down the line. I love what you said about that five-generation thing. I haven't necessarily heard that before, but I think it makes a whole lot of sense, because what it starts to do is that you start living your life in service. You know, and that is a
and
much
not service
greater.
To you, because you're not going to impact you. You're not going to feel it. You're not. It's not changing who you are. What you know. I think it, one of the things that really came up with that was, I think they were talking about agriculture and the way that we farm and the way that we look after things, and you know, it was always just that. Well, if we do this now, what's the impact going to be down the track? And I reckon we're almost a society of immediate gratification, but even as the Industrial Revolution moved forwards, that gratification became much more about self than it did about future. And I think it's left us in a situation now where we're in trouble.
Yeah, I'd agree. And we're seeing it, you know, in Australian politics right now. I don't understand this situation all that well, but I'm sure the river systems in Queensland and northern New South Wales and all those fish deaths and everything else is similarly driven by short-term politics. You know, it's about the agriculture of that area. And whilst it's not solely that, I'm sure that has a huge amount to do with it. You know, our current, where we are with our environment, where we are with our society, you know, our values and our morals. The fact that people feel as though they're taking action by writing something on Facebook as opposed to actually getting out there and truly taking action, because it's not enough just to post your opinion on some sort of Facebook forum. You know, getting out there and making a difference is what makes a difference.
So, you know, I think it's one of the drives for me is making a difference, is it's creating a change that is more sustainable long term and impacting, you know, students. From my perspective, it's always been a really important thing. Hence the philosophy symposium and the podcast and student adjusting nights and DG and logistics and ASA, a whole lot of different things that have happened for me to make sure that I can have a have that impact. But if you could distill a message down to people that are a little bit lost or a little bit unsure of to what to do, how to help, how to create change, is there some things that you would suggest that they start to even if it start to just think a little bit more about A, B, C, D?
Well, I think the simplest thing here comes from, I think it was Gerber wrote the E-Myth. And one of his exercises there was write your own eulogy. So, again, it comes back to this idea of time being up for you. If you were able to write your own eulogy, if you lived to be whatever age you were, what would you say you did with your life? So when you look back and someone's saying, oh, you know, John here, he didn't bugger all really. He played Fortnite. He socialized on occasion, but he was a real pessimist. He was really sexist. He never really pushed himself a whole lot. He had some money behind him, which was good, but, you know, he just got takeaway pizza with that money. You know, is that a life that you want to have lived? Or would you rather be saying, you know what, and this is when I first did this, I had, you know, I was on his deathbed. Patrick was surrounded by his, I think it was 43 great-great-grandchildren and all his other relatives that were there, the people from the wildlife centre that he ended up working in when he actually retired were there, surrounded by animals, you know, dignitaries from around the planet were there because he had such an impact on society. So it was very full like that. And it started giving me a sense that, you know, if I'm really going to do something, when is the best time? So I would say to people out there, take your time to write your own eulogy. Because it's a really worthwhile thing.
I think I shared a while back some audio with you about, I think it was Peter Daniels. And one of the things that he said, and it was... He was an illiterate bricklayer and, you know, is now, you know, significantly influencing the world, you know, travelling the world, speaking on politics and on, but he basically, you know, couldn't write, couldn't read, couldn't write. And now he's written multiple books and he's had, you know, huge success in business. And he said one of the things that was, and I'm not overly religious, but his thing was, in the eyes of God, all men are equal. So what separates me as an illiterate bricklayer from anyone else is only the value I hold in it. So, you know, like we sometimes we sit there and say, oh, well, we've got to allow other people to be able to, you know, create the change and do the job. But sitting on the sidelines waiting for someone else to do it isn't getting the job done. And one of my frustrations, I'll throw the CAA under the bus. One of my frustrations with the CAA or the ACA is there's a lot of talk, but not a lot of action. You know, and when the rubber meets the road, a lot of people are found wanting when it comes to chiropractic. And it's hard. It's hard to keep trying to, you know, front up and try to push forwards when, you know, there's so much apathy. And you know, I use that word with Nimrod, and I think in the past he sort of said it's not apathy. I think they don't feel like you feel. They don't believe what you believe, and they aren't motivated the way you're motivated. So therefore, to them, they don't have a drive to move forward. But I know that there'll be a few people that will listen to this podcast that will go, but yeah, there is stuff that we need to do, but they need to do it. They need to start, do something, take action, you know. And I think for me, you know, if I can piggyback on what you've already said as far as the eulogy goes, it's doesn't matter whether it's perfect. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, you've just got to start action. Action will trump everything, you know, as far as, you know.
Yeah, action and action with purpose.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys out there who just want to get out there and take the action.
Do it for the sake of doing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's something commendable about that because it's still driven by a philosophy somewhere. Mm. But when you start taking action, considered action from a very strong position of purpose, that's when you create real change. And think about people like Gandhi, you know, who were driven purely by their philosophy.
Yeah, yeah.
By their philosophy. And again, the ACC is not about having a college. No, it's not about doing the teaching stuff. It's not about having all that mechanism that you have with a chiropractic program.
Yeah.
It's about the philosophy.
Yeah.
Because if it was about just having a teaching institution, then why not just go to a university? That makes a whole lot of sense. They've been doing it for 100 years. Yeah. They know how to do the job. Why not just go there? It's because they don't have the philosophy. Mm. So for us, the ACC was about enshrining those core principles, those chiropractic tenets, in a place that could teach chiropractors those tenets so that they can then go out and practice that way, which would then mean eventually, as those generations continue, that my kids' great-grandkids will have access to chiropractic, will have access to that philosophy.
Yeah.
So the action that we have to have, I feel, will be most effective when it's driven by your philosophy.
So you can understand why I think the chiropractic in Australia is going to be led really well by the ACC. Dr. Pat Sims has been recently appointed the president, which is a continuation of his role with all the work gone in getting through the accreditation process. But we're in good hands. I look forward to the journey that the ACC has as far as impacting chiropractic in Australia. So that'll be it for me for the moment, and I look forward to continuing the conversation again next week with Dr. Pat Sims.
Shoulders, tell me what you see.